We're joined here now with Congressman Steny Hoyer from Maryland, current co-chair of the Congressional Fire Service Caucus. Congressman, thank you very much for joining us today.
I'm very pleased to be with you. Thanks for the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you. I know your schedule's tight, so we'll get right down to the questions. What was your reaction to the President's fiscal year 2007 budget request for interest to the nation's fire service?
Well, as someone who has been a strong proponent of our fire service and emergency responders, I'm deeply disappointed that the President continues to reflect the attitude that the federal government is not a real partner with our local emergency response teams. That is certainly respecting fire and emergency medical response teams, but also reflects his budget priorities with respect to the police. But I was deeply disappointed that we didn't fully fund the fire grant program in his budget, nor the SAFER programs. In fact, in every one of his budgets, he has either drastically reduced or eliminated altogether funding for the fire grant program. And we did $545 million in 06. The Congress did that. Prior to that, we'd done 2 years of $750 million. We have over $3 billion, in grant applications, so the money is very, very needed at the local level. The President only asked for $293 million in his budget, a woefully inadequate number. My view is, and my hope is, and what I'm going to be working towards, is to try to increase that number as close to the $750 million that we did in 03 and 04 as I possibly can. In addition, in the SAFER program, the President included no money. And this is an area where, of course, we have some of our biggest problems in understaffing, in manning our rolling equipment and manning our firehouses. We know there's a great challenge, and the SAFER program was directed at solving that problem. Unfortunately, the President, again, believes that's totally a local responsibility, notwithstanding the fact if we have a national terrorist incident or a national disaster, the responders in the first instance are going to be local personnel, fire personnel, emergency medical response teams, as well as our police. Again, the President has undermined the partnership between the federal, state, and local governments in making us as capable and ready as possible. So we're going to be working on those issues in the coming months.
Why do you believe the administration has not proposed greater funding levels for these programs?
Well, as I said, the administration expresses the fact that these are local responsibilities. And clearly they are local responsibilities. And clearly local governments and state governments spend far beyond what would be the role of the federal government. But the federal government, in my opinion, has a role to play as a partner in beefing up both the numbers of people that we have on our emergency response teams, and also the making sure they have the proper equipment and training. That's what fire grant and SAFER programs are designed to do. But this administration really believes that ought to be a local responsibility. But when you talk to the local governments, they're stretched pretty tight, particularly with the cutbacks in other areas that the administration has proposed in terms of education or in health care. The local governments are being stretched to a point where they don't have the resources. And if we do not join in as a partner, unfortunately, the security of our neighborhoods and our people is going to be undermined.
How do you plan to respond to the President's budget?
Well, as I said, in the first instance, we being the co-chairs of the Fire Service Caucus, Mr. Weldon, Mr. Andrews, Mr. Bullitt, Mr. Pasquale, Democrats and Republicans, in a bipartisan way, as we have always done, have asked the Budget Committee to include $750 million for the fire grant and $500 million for the SAFER program in the House budget resolution. I'm hopeful that they will do that. They did not do that last year, but I'm hopeful that they'll do it this year. And we're going to be working towards that end in a bipartisan way. Kurt Weldon and I have been working on that. And, of course, Bill Pasquale, who was really the father in many respects of the fire grant program, and Sherry Bullitt, who's chaired the committee and has been so very helpful in this regard. And Rob Andrews, who's been tireless in his advocacy of these programs, will be working together. But if the budget committee doesn't include it in the budget, it will still be our intent to pursue this matter through the appropriations process and even add, as we did last year, an amendment on the floor to add these dollars. Now, it was agreed upon on the floor last year. We didn't have a fight, and that was good, but the co-chairs are willing to fight this issue and present it to the members because we believe they will support their local firefighters and emergency response teams.
And one last question, Congressman. Why do you believe these programs are so important?
Well, if we're going to have security in our neighborhoods and in our communities, and indeed in our country, it is because we have trained, well-equipped people of sufficient numbers to respond to any crisis that might confront us, whether it's in New York City or whether it's in Mechanicsville, where I live in Maryland, or whether it's in Kurt Weldon's hometown in Pennsylvania, or Sherry Bollert's in New York, or Rob Andrews in New Jersey. We need to make sure that we have the capability to respond, whether it's a terrorist act, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it's a fire, whatever it might be. If we're going to keep America safe, it is because we have personnel at the local level who will be the first responders to any kind of a crisis that are well-prepared, well-equipped, well-trained, and, as we have said, in sufficient numbers to respond to the crisis. That's why I believe this is critical, and that's why we're going to fight for it.
Congressman Hoyer, we'd like to thank you for your support to the American Fire Service and, of course, here at Firehouse.com for joining us.
Thank you, my friend.
All right.
Appreciate it very much.
We're joined here now by Congressman Kurt Weldon, one of the founder of the Congressional Fire Services Caucus, Congressman from Pennsylvania. Congressman Weldon, thank you for joining us today.
That's great to be with you today, and great to be with the first responders of America.
Thanks, sir. Can you give us a little history? We're elected first to Congress in 1987, and at that time, being a former fire chief, what was there at the federal level for the fire service?
Nothing, actually. In fact, you had Democrat and Republican leaders both trying to see how much they could squeeze the first responder. At the time, the Congress was overwhelmingly controlled by Democrats, and the White House had Ronald Reagan. Neither of them were doing anything for the first responders. The Congress talked a lot, but I couldn't even get a coin bill through. The Democrats wouldn't let me in my first term offer a Benjamin Franklin coin bill to honor the work of the fire service. And what you all might remember was the Fire Service Bill of Rights, where I first laid down some basic notions about what the federal government should be doing to help the fire service gain the respect it deserved. Ronald Reagan's budget people were trying to zero out the fire academy and the fire administration. So I can honestly tell you that neither the Democrat nor the Republican parties gave a hoot about the firefighters. They talked a lot, but no substance.
How did you respond to that? I mean, where did we go from there?
Well, the first thing I had to do was to organize the fire service and organize what I called the sleeping giant. And I did that by going around the country, working with a group of firefighters, and a couple of guys were Mason Langford from Texas, who's passed now, but Mason was a good friend of Jim Wright's. And I basically had a simple message, and I must have given this speech 500 times in every one of the 50 states, and I've been in all 50 talking to the fire service. And that was, first of all, you have to understand, you have to tell the story of who you are. You're not just the first responder. You're the organization that represents the heart and soul of America. You're the backbone of every one of the 32,000 communities where you're organized. You're the people that rescue the cats in the trees, pump out the cellars. You respond to all incidents, all hazmat disasters, anything where people are needed, you're there. And oftentimes, you organize the search parties, and you're the community-based group that helps organize the parades and gives the town its patriotism, and it's the group you call upon whenever you need something. And that's true in small rural villages, and it's true in big cities, where the union raises money for charities. I mean, the fire service is more than just the first response to disaster. It is, in fact, the backbone of our municipalities, and the heart and soul of what this country is all about. The second thing I told them is they had to be united. The fire service, when I got involved and in the years I was active, was disjointed. The union would fight with the volunteers. The union and the volunteers would fight with the chiefs. NFPA would do its own thing. the arson investigators, the fire instructors, the state fire marshals would all be about doing what was important for them, none of them realizing the first goal was to bring everyone together to understand what this group of people in America was, what it means, and that when it organizes, it would get response at all levels of government. So unity was critical. And I said, look, agree to have a common basis of understanding of the fire service in the first, and then agree to disagree on issues that separate and differentiate one group from the other. The third was to be proactive, not to wait until the budgets were drafted and the laws were written and the policies made, but to be proactive and set up agendas at the state and federal level that would help you write the budgets and draft the legislation, testify at the hearings. And that led to the fourth item, which was to learn how to work within the system, to have access inside the halls of Congress, inside the state capitals, inside the county courthouses, so you really understood the way government worked. And then the fifth item was the most important, and that was to be political. And I always made the differentiation between being partisan and being political. Some of the fire groups have been partisan, and that's the worst mistake you can make. Because in the end, when you're partisan, one party will take you for granted, and the other party will say, we don't need you. You need to have the respect of leaders in both parties, both Republicans and Democrats. You need to do what Delaware does. In Delaware, when you run for office, you need to get the support of the Democrats or Republicans, but regardless of what party you're in, you've got to have the support of the fire service. And that's what the American Fire Service needed to do. Not to paint a donkey or elephant on the back of the fire truck, but rather to understand you needed to be respected by people from both parties that would want to listen and learn how to support the priorities the fire service has. Well, those 5 points I took around the country, and I convinced the fire service, if you network with your elected official, then you can help me better serve you in Washington. And it worked. We quickly, within 5 years, became the largest caucus in the Congress, and there was so much work that I only had one staffer who was doing all this work, and I said, I've got to find a way to develop an entity that can operate on its own. So I formed the Congressional Fire and EMS Institute, CFSI. And organizing that, again, not for my partisan benefit, but rather in a totally nonpartisan way, to show the officials in Congress that I wasn't going to use this for my party, that it was about bigger than just one party or one political group. It really was about what was best for the first responders in America. And they believed me. We established it. I had bipartisan support from the beginning with people like Steny Hoyer and people like Joe Biden. I had bipartisan support from Jim Wright because of Mason Lankford. And I chaired the effort the first couple of years. And I could have probably stayed as chair forever. But I said, you know, is that really what's best for the fire service? And the answer was no. What was best for the fire service was for me to rotate the chairs back and forth between the House and the Senate and back and forth between the Republican and Democrat parties. And so every 2 years, for the last probably 14 years, I've rotated the chairmanship of the caucus and the leadership of the Institute back and forth between Democrat and Republican, between House member and Senate member. And that's why we're a unique organization in Washington that everybody respects, because I've never let partisan politics enter into what the Fire Institute and what the Fire Caucus is all about. And as a result of that effort, as the war started to spread around the country, the fire service saw the results. Elected officials said, hey, we want to be a part of this. We want to work with this group. We want to understand how we can network our elected officials and we can network with the fire and EMS community. The Institute, we established programs of sensitizing members to what the fire service is all about. I took members annually out to run with the D.C. Fire Department, sitting on a fire truck to see what urban firefighters go through. We started a training program to take staffers down to Dover Fire School and Maryland Fire and Rescue Institute to eat some smoke and see what a firefighter really goes through. We established an awards program at the Institute where every member of Congress could give out awards to their constituents for length of service or for heroism or any other activity. And we basically created a bond, a glue, between the fire officials in the districts and the members of Congress in the House and the Senate. And as a result, we got more and more visibility. And as a result, it didn't matter really who in the end controlled the Congress, because we built a base in both parties that both parties ended up wanting to support. And remember, back when I started this, nobody was supportive. So neither party can say they were the party of the fire service, because they flat out weren't. The Democrats were in control of the Congress for the first 10 years I was in Washington, and I couldn't get anything through. I couldn't get the coin bill for the Bill of Rights. I had to fight. I remember I had to go back and sit on the House floor for 5 hours because a Democrat subcommittee chairman from California wouldn't let my coin bill honoring the fire service come up for a vote. So when the Democrats controlled the Congress, they were totally unresponsive. And the Republican in the White House, Ronald Reagan, was unresponsive. When Clinton came in, we still didn't get support. We got a lot of talk. The only one who was really supportive was James Lee Witt. And he was a good guy. We had a chance to work with him. And but in the end, when I offered the fire grant program and offered it as an amendment to the defense bill, the Clinton administration opposed it. They weren't supportive of it. It was in the last few months of Clinton's administration, and they would not help us and would not come out and publicly support the passage of that act. And when the Bush administration came in, they didn't support it either. And I had to bring, you know, the first budget that the Bush administration proposed in the first quarter of 01 had no money to fund the fire grant program. I brought in 40 Republican members of the Congress into my office, and we invited over the budget chairman, Mitch Daniels, who's now governor, I think, of Ohio, or Michigan, one of those states. And he knew what was coming, because when he walked in the room, he brought a fire extinguisher in. And he said, "You know why I brought this?" And we said, "Yeah, we know why. Because you've done a foolish thing. You zeroed out any funding for this new grant program that we just passed last year." Well, that was the beginning and basically the forcing of the administration to put $100 million on the table. The first $100 million in the history of the fire service for fire grants. Today, that program is the most popular program in Congress. Every member of Congress knows about it. Members are proud to go deliver their checks. They're proud to have their pictures taken. And every year, the budget people try to push back the funding, and every year we're successful in plussing it back up. And that didn't happen because it was logical. It happened because the fire service understood that in this type of government, you have to be involved. You have to hold people accountable. You have friends in both parties. You have to reward your friends, and you have to punish your enemies, whether they're Republicans or Democrats.
Thanks, sir. Now, I talked to a lot of departments around the country, and certainly a lot of them are gung-ho, and they appreciate the support, and they appreciate the funding that does go to the fire grant funding, but a lot of them, after a couple of years that they're not successful, they tend to talk it down, and they don't want to apply anymore, and even this year, we're starting to see a lot less applications. We're actually about halfway what it was last year in submitted applications, and probably about the same in started applications. I mean, what can you say to those fire departments that just they're not applying and they're not wanting to support the program at all just because they haven't had success in it yet?
Well, as you know, there are 32,000 fire and EMS departments in America, and the last time I checked, 22,000 had received at least one grant. Some have received two, a few have received three. We took all the politics out of this grant process. It's the only federal program where the actual firefighters and the beneficiaries themselves rate the applications. That is absolutely unusual. It doesn't happen anyplace else in any level of government where the fire service actually rates the applications. So there's no politics in this process. As you know, in fact, I think a couple of you have been involved with this on a regular basis. The fire service goes down. They meet for a couple of weeks. They assess the applications without the names on them, and they decide which ones would win. For the companies that haven't gotten grants, and I have some in my own district, one, I say, that they may show as being too affluent. And therefore, in comparison to other applications, they just don't get a high rating because they may have a strong financial base. They may not have the need that the reviewers feel other fire departments have. In other cases, I think it's a question of maybe we're beginning to meet the needs of the basic material and equipment that the fire service has asked for. Maybe it's time to start shifting some of that funding focus over to the personnel issues. Now, the SAFER program, which I also added to our defense bill 2 years ago, has just gotten its first significant funding level of about $100 million. That's not very much money nationwide, but maybe it's time to start focusing on the personnel side. And that means that volunteer departments that want to create new programs to entice more volunteers can apply. It means volunteer companies that want to hire a paid driver or a part-time inspector can do that. And it means, like the COPS program, we can begin to help the fully paid departments increase the size of their workforce and have it paid for over a period of a few years. I think we need to listen to the fire service. And the fire service, maybe they want to have a reorientation of the funding. But 22,000 out of 32,000 is not a bad number. There are some that just don't want to apply because they don't want any strings attached to the federal government. I've met those kinds of departments as well. And believe it or not, there are still departments out there that do not know about the program. Now, that's hard to imagine. But when I travel around the country, especially where you have small rural departments, where they don't have computers, they can't go online, they still don't know that they can apply online for a grant with basically no strings attached to assist them. And so the word still has not gotten to every fire department in America that these funds are available. And for those that haven't won, I would say, you know, keep trying. I mean, maybe it's the way you wrote your application. Maybe you, you know, have to realign the way that you show your assets. Maybe you have to, you know, find a way of teaming or focusing on a need that you just can't meet. But I would never say to give up. I mean, it's their money that we're spending. It's the money of the taxpayers. So I would encourage everyone to continue to apply.
Any other statements you would like to make to the fire service? I mean, we certainly want to extend our thanks to you and the work you've done in the past 20 years in Congress and in helping the nation's fire service. Any last messages for us?
I would just say that, you know, there's no group that better represents what America is all about. You know, we can talk to our military, and I'm a big supporter of the military as the vice chairman of the Armed Services Committee, but we pay our military. There's no group in America that is largely volunteer that loses people, loses lives, each year, every year, in just doing their job. There's no group of people in America that goes out and raises $400,000 to buy a new pumper, an engine truck, or to buy a new ladder truck. It's $500,000 or $600,000 or $700,000. No group in America. And, you know, to me, as a fiscal conservative, people say, well, how can you advocate spending more money? There's no better investment, in my mind, than spending it on the first responder. The paid departments need resources because they're facing the challenge and the threats of terrorists coming into their cities. The volunteers need support because they're being asked to prepare for the unexpected. You know, I was the chief of a very small town department in the mid-1970s. In my town, in January of 1975, we had the largest fire and incident in America for the entire year. A chemical-carrying tanker, the Edgar M. Quinney, made a U-turn in the Delaware River, and because of an argument between the pilot and the captain of the ship, and the bow thrusters not working, it rammed a docked oil tanker filled with 300,000 barrels of Algerian crude oil. The resultant explosion killed 29 people instantly and burned out of control for 3 days. That entire incident was handled with volunteers, 80 volunteer companies working round the clock. You know, so you never know where the disaster is going to occur. You never know where that plane's going to come down. You never know where that rail train, that train going through a small town, might have an accident, a bloody might occur. You never know where that incident's going to be, and that's why it's extremely important to provide the tools and the resources. So instead of making firefighters worry about having to raise money, they can focus on training, they can focus on standards, they can focus on improving the capabilities they have and giving them better resources. We're not there yet. I'm not going to be happy until every firefighter, every paramedic in America has a device that they wear that's unobtrusive, that transmits the GPS location of that firefighter, of that paramedic, 24 hours a day when they're on call in an incident, not when they're obviously, but when they're on call in the station or when they're out on an assignment, and also gives you their vital signs, their heart rate, their pulse, and their breathing condition. This technology the military is using today, and I'm not going to be happy until every firefighter has that. If we'd had that technology up in Boston, those six firefighters wouldn't be dead today. Two go into a warehouse, their air supply runs out, the chief doesn't know where they are, and he sends four more in the building. All six die. We would have had two firefighters in Philly still alive when they went into a high-rise fire, and the chief thought they were two floors from where they actually were when their air packs ran out. The technology that we're developing for our military is technology that needs to be immediately applied to the first responder. And those kinds of challenges, including lighter weight turnout gear, better ways to assess risk, better capabilities to bring in technology to assist in any situation, we're still not at the point that we need to be. And that's the challenge for the fire service in the 21st century. It's taking advantage of what the taxpayers already have paid for in the way of technology and bringing that to the point where we can reduce the loss of life and reduce the terrible injuries that occur to firefighters, both paid and volunteer, around the country every year. We're on our way. What I say is we're at the top of the mountain, and we're looking over, but we're not there yet. We got to keep pushing. You know, only 8 states have fire caucuses and fire institutes. I want to see almost every state have a process. Now, they don't have to have an actual institute like Pennsylvania has or like Indiana has, but they need to have a process like Delaware has, where the fire service is respected by both parties, by every candidate running for office, from the governor down to the state house and Senate leader. When you have that, then there'll be no more problems. Elected officials at all levels will proudly and eagerly fund the needs of the first responder in America. We're almost there, but we got to continue the push, and we got to learn how to adjust. If the programs we have in place, like the grant program, need to be tweaked, need to be changed, then the fire service has to tell us that, and we have to listen and respond. Because in the end, the priorities for the fire service must come from the fire service. They can't come from politicians. You know, I don't fight fires anymore. I wish I could, but I don't. I don't know the newest nuances and details of what the needs are. The first responders do. And all I can do is be the conduit to make sure that Congress is listening. And I'll guarantee as long as I'm there, you're going to have that conduit loud and clear.
Congressman Weldon, we, on behalf of myself and Firehouse.com and, of course, the American Fire Service, we'd like to thank you for your support of the fire service and your efforts on Congress. And we hope that we can help you get to the other side of that mountain and get to the end.
Well, the end is to save lives for the American people. We still have one of the worst fire loss rates in the industrialized world, and two, to reduce fire deaths. I'm not going to be happy until there are no memorial services in Emmitsburg. You know, I've been to too many of those where we lose 100 firefighters on average each year. Too many families have had their loved ones taken away. People who have volunteered and die in the line of duty. And I'm also still upset that we haven't recognized that junior firefighters, which are being encouraged in states around the country, are still not recognized for death benefits. It's absolutely outrageous to me that we have young kids, 15, 16-year-old kids, that are being supervised by the leadership of fire companies as the next generation of fire service officials. And still, those young people are not being given the recognition, and their families are not being given the kind of prestige they deserve when we lose a young firefighter like those that we've lost.
This presentation is proudly sponsored by Plimovent. Plimovent is a driving force in advancing firefighter health and safety. Plimovent's diesel exhaust removal systems feature 100% source capture to eliminate all diesel exhaust from the firehouse, as stated in NFPA 1500. Plimovent diesel exhaust removal systems meet the requirements stated in the Fire Act Grant Program guidance for modifications to facilities. Visit plimovent.com or click on the link on this page to learn more about their exhaust removal systems.
Welcome back, and this portion of the podcast, we've got another honored guest with us today, Senator Mike DeWine from Ohio, also co-chair of the Congressional Fire Caucus. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today, Senator DeWine.
Well, it's good to be with you. Thank you very much.
Well, appreciate it. And I'd just like to talk a little bit. Let's go back a little bit and let's talk about the Fire Act from the Senate point of view, and if you could fill us in a little more on that.
Well, you know, I saw a real problem, as I know some of my colleagues in the House did, and Chris Dodd did in the Senate, and the problem was, as I traveled around Ohio, we have, you know, so many small fire departments, as well as mid-size and large fire departments, and a lot of them were just having problems struggling with money, not being able really to get the basic equipment that they needed. Some of them cover a huge geographical area with sometimes all volunteer fire departments, some mostly volunteer with one or two paid members. And I wanted to try to help, and the federal government really had not ever been involved in helping local fire departments to any great extent. And so in the Senate, Chris Dodd and I introduced the Fire Act, and we got a lot of skepticism because we'd never done anything like this before, but then we started getting some support, and we started getting it going, and it has worked just exceedingly well. It's been an amazing program. I've seen in my own home state what it has done. We've seen department after department where it has really made a big, big difference. I was at a department the other day, for example, and it was out in a very small rural area, but they cover a big, big area. And they didn't even have, turnout gear for every member of the department until the Fire Act came along. And now they have individualized turnout gear. So, it's pretty basic stuff, but it made a big difference for that department.
Part of the, not many people realize that the Fire Act was actually two pieces. It was enacted in 2000. Wasn't there a reauthorization that went on as well?
Right. We came back in 2004, and the original Fire Act was aimed at training. It can be used for training. It can be used for fire trucks, protective equipment, radios, fire prevention programs, educational programs in the community. We came back in 2004 and reauthorized it, tried to update it a little bit, tried to make it so that the larger fire departments could get a little more money so that they would not be so limited in what they could get. We also tried to recognize in that second act that a lot of what the fire departments are doing is in EMS work. When I travel around Ohio and talk to the fire departments, most runs are actually EMS runs. They're 2-3 maybe even more to one EMS runs than they are fire runs, and so we wanted to help in that area as well. And so we were able, I think, to learn in those 4 years and kind of bring that bill up to date, and we still were able to get everyone's support and put a comprehensive bill together. We've been able to provide a lot of money back to the local communities, and Ohio's kind of a typical state. We've been able to provide over $100 million back to Ohio, into every single county, all 88 counties, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of separate fire departments from big down to the small.
Excellent, and a lot of people are concerned that the money seems to be going down after the past couple of years. It went to the high in $750 million in fiscal year 03 and 04, and then we've been moving down since. What seems to be causing that, and what can...
Well,
it
is, and we just need everyone really to. It's a political thing in the sense that we need to get people's support. We need to get people who care about this to rally and to talk to the members of the House, members of the Senate, tell them how important it is, tell them what kind of impact it has on the local community, tell them how it does save lives. And that's important. We need that kind of political support here in Washington. And I would just make a kind of a plea on this show today to get that kind of political support. Part of the money is from the Fire Act has gone to the SAFER bill, which is can be used to hire more people. So that's we understand that. But if you look at the overall dollars, they are, as you say, going down, and that's not good. We don't like to see that, and we're fighting every year to keep these figures up and to keep the dollars going back to our local communities up.
We talked to a lot of members of the public, and a lot of people don't know much about the fire department, and until they really need to call 911. I mean, it's how are statistics in Ohio, and how do you impress upon the public that this is an issue to support the local fires?
Well, look, I start by saying, most Ohioans, if you live in a rural area, you have a heart attack, it's going to be your fire department. Someone's going to come out of that fire department to try to save your life. If you're out in a car wreck, the jaws of life, when they come out, that's going to be the fire department that's trying to get you out of that wreck and get you to a hospital. If there's a fire, obviously the fire department's going to be there. to get your kids out and to get you out. It's the fire department that's going to be talking to your kids in school about fire safety. Just in Ohio alone, we lose about 140 Ohioans who are killed in fires every year. We lose over 1,000 Ohioans who are injured. You know, the economic loss is huge, in the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in Ohio each year. So that's just Ohio, and Ohio's kind of a typical state. Nationwide, nearly 40,000 children ages 14 and under are injured by fires in the home. Just a phenomenal number of kids who are impacted by fires. And a phenomenon we have seen, in Ohio, we've seen across the nation, is we're losing a lot of kids who go off to college, and they are dying in fires, sometimes in dorms, but a lot of times it is in student housing, off-campus student housing. Parents need to really be concerned about that. So these are all things that, the Fire Act can help. It can help with education, can help to make our fire departments better equipped, better trained. It's a matter of life and death, really.
Besides the Fire Act, I mean, it seems to get most of the press because it is, the largest source of funding for fire departments around the country. But aren't there some other issues going on that you're working on in the Senate as well?
Well, I've always worked on, children's issues. I'm a big proponent of medical research for children, big proponent of our children's hospitals. I guess that comes from the fact that my wife and I have 8 kids and now 9 grandkids, and so this has been kind of a real passion of mine to help kids, and I spend a lot of time working on that.
Now, as far as handling a major incidents, I mean the Hurricane Katrina and the September 11th attacks, of course, I mean they brought in departments from all over the place, and we've heard some stories that we had some largely volunteer departments that came in as well to assist, and then they go back and they've got no jobs. Their businesses really were impressed that they went, but needed to stay in business. What kind of things are coming that can help departments and volunteers in that situation?
Well, I think one of the things we're trying to do is look at legislation that would help in this area. Someone leaves their job, they should be able to keep their job. They shouldn't lose their job in this area. We do this for servicemen. We ought to do it for people who leave to go down and work on a catastrophe. They shouldn't lose their job. I mean, if they're volunteer firemen, for example, they go down and work for a few weeks, they shouldn't lose their regular job because of that, and we all protect them in the law.
As far as the looking forward the next couple of years, how long was the Fire Act reauthorized for? And
we do this normally reauthorization is every 3 or 4 years, and so we're going to be back at this. This is something that we always have to keep coming back at, and we fine tune these bills. The real battle comes every year in what's called the appropriations process, and that is you can authorize it but then you have to come back and appropriate it, and you have to that's all kind of jargon, Washington jargon, but it simply means you got to spend the money every year. You got to put the money in. You got to put your money where your mouth is. And, if you don't put the money in, it doesn't matter what you said you were going to do. So authorization is saying what you're going to do, but appropriation is actually doing it. And so every year, it's what we were talking about a few minutes ago, we've got to get the public support and the public to understand how important this is.
Now, the Congressional Fire Service Institute itself is the largest caucus on Capitol Hill. Can you tell us a little bit? A lot of people don't realize that institute is up there, and it is another place to look for support and to voice opinions from the fire service towards the legislators?
What is, and this is, you know, where we have the opportunity to exchange ideas, where, you know, members of Congress show their support for the fire departments and for the men and women who are out there who are making a difference. We also get great support when the men and women who are in the departments and who are risking their lives every day come out here to Washington. And a lot of times, frankly, I see, you know, a lot of the men and women who are doing this back in my home state, and that they have a big impact on me. I saw, you know, a group of stopped by the local my local fire department a couple weeks ago, in fact, in Cedarville, Ohio, and they, you know, talk with them and saw what they were doing, saw some of their equipment, saw some of the different programs they were carrying out, and I try to do that as I travel around the state. I've stopped in dozens and dozens of fire departments from the biggest to the smallest, and I'm just always impressed by the professionalism. I'm impressed by the quality of the people, the quality of the work they do. You know, they're the first line of defense of terrorism, first line of defense of, if you have a heart attack, first line of defense if, you know, if you have an auto accident, first line of defense if there's a fire. They do just phenomenal work. They just top rate.
Well, Senator, we certainly appreciate myself for you stopping by here today and assisting us in this mission with this podcast. And, of course, from the American Fire Service, we certainly want to express our thanks. You've certainly been doing a lot and continue to do a lot, and we certainly appreciate the support. And we understand you have a tight schedule, and we hope to let you go back and keep giving that support for us. And, you know, at any time, feel free to let us know what else we can do to help you help us.
Well, great. I really enjoyed being with all of you, and we'll do it again sometime, and we'll continue to work. It's a really a labor of love, and we'll keep fighting here.
We appreciate it again, Senator Mike DeWine from Ohio. We thank you again for stopping by.
Thank you very much.